Mr. Wright, I understand you've spoken to Ms. Evans, so thank you for that. We have your contact information. Mr. Toff's not back with us yet. When he's here in a moment, we'll ask questions. So, just moving on in terms of the other matters which were raised in terms of the overall decision-making as to why east-facing slips were not to be included as part of the original proposal. One of the matters was to do with construction costs, and I just wondered if there were any comments in terms of what the sort of additional cost would be and why that was part of the decision-making process. Thank you.
Julian Boswell for Highways England. Highways England will only include an element in the scheme if there is sufficient justification for doing so, because clearly public money is being spent and these schemes are being brought forward in accordance with the National Network's national policy statement. And so in headline terms, as we've set out in the application and in various submissions during the examination, there hasn't ever been a justification in terms of the predicted traffic flows for the eastern facing slips to bring that into the scheme, and that, as I mentioned in passing earlier, has not been a borderline judgment. And so one element of that, one limb of that equation, is clearly that adding a substantial element to the scheme like that inevitably involves a cost. It also involves taking land, and whilst there may be some willing landowners in this equation, there may be some that aren't. And as you appreciate, Madam, there's a compulsory acquisition, compelling public interest test to be met, as we've mentioned in one of our submissions. So coming on to the cost point directly, there's a twist in the mix, which is referred to in our submission, where we point out that, well, we're just going through the stages, so I'm doing this as a lawyer, and then Mr. Cullen sitting next to me, as necessary, can assist. So to deliver east-facing slips, firstly, the two roundabouts are too small to take an extra arm, so they haven't been designed, unsurprisingly, to take those extra slips in. So those would have to be, that there would be an extra cost associated with that. And then there would be the slips themselves going down to join the main carriageway. But as is mentioned in one of our representations, there is an issue to do with departures regarding safety. So building those alone, remembering that we haven't designed this, we haven't analysed this in detail, does raise a significant issue in terms of whether the visibility of how the slips would interact with the carriageway as it's currently proposed would work. And so it's by no means certain that just building the slips would get through that process if we had gone down that route, which obviously we haven't. To solve that, assuming those departures couldn't be cleared, there would be two ways of solving that, one of which is mentioned expressly and the other one I'll mention in a moment. Essentially, the issue is that it's all to do with the level, the height of the main carriageway for approximately 1 kilometre, roughly beginning at the junctions, or the two new roundabouts for 1 kilometre to the east. So that to sort out the levels issue, you either have to raise the main carriageway at the eastern end, which is the embankment that's referred to in our submission, or the alternative would be to reduce it at the western end by introducing a much deeper or materially deeper cutting. So again, coming now to the costs, the specific costs, and bearing in mind that this is all theoretical in the sense that we have not designed the scheme to accommodate this, and we would have to withdraw the scheme to do this, and we don't have any intention of doing that. you're looking at, and this is an exercise that Mr. Cullen has done with the quantity surveyor for the appointed contractors at a very high level. So you're looking at a minimum of £2.5 million to include the slips and the larger roundabouts. If, however, you couldn't get the departures through to simply allow that to be the works, and I guess we're kind of jumping between what the extra cost would have been to build it and what it might cost to retrofit it as well, at least in theory. Then if you went down the embankment route, which is the cheaper of the two alternatives that I mentioned, then you're talking about an extra million minimum, so that would take it to £3.5 million minimum. If, however, you went down the cutting route, which is unlikely because of what I'm about to say, you're talking about a much higher cost of something of the order of a minimum of £20 million. So if you couldn't overcome the safety departures point, you would be much more likely to go down the embankment route because of the cost. And you'd be looking, as I say, just to repeat, a minimum of £3.5 million. And within that, it's a minimum of £2.5 million that accounts for the actual slips themselves and the larger roundabouts to accommodate the extra arm.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions in relation to the construction costs matters? Mr. Wright.
Yeah, you mentioned that the roundabouts were too small to take an extra road. Would those roundabouts be large enough for a 40-foot lorry to make a 90-degree turn from the B through 294 down the new A30 to Chiverton roundabout, or would be restricted in using that junction because of the size of the lorries and have to continue down the existing road to Chiverton roundabout?
Would you like us to respond to that?
If someone is able to assist us with the design,
Mr. Cullen,
so that we know that.
You're right, Ross Cullen Values England. Yes, yeah, so the obviously we've designed the junction in accordance with the national design standards. And in doing that, we have to check that all movements with the max legal articulated vehicles, the 40 foot that Mr. Wright, Mr. Wright refers to, can make those manoeuvres. So yes, that all those movements would be possible.
Mum, from Mr. Parker's position, this all turns on justification. If it's justified, then the cost analysis has to be revisited. Obviously, I have spoken to the highways consultant, and they say 7 days they can turn it around in. If the position is as set out by Highways England, then it's going to be difficult for Mr. Parker to argue otherwise. But the question he does raise is, Has the exercise been done in terms of retrofitting it after the scheme? Because I assume those costs are include some form of economy of scale of doing the exercise at the time of the same work. So has an exercise been undertaken as to the cost of retrofitting those subsequently?
Okay.
Madam, Julian Boswell for Highways England. Just to be clear, the figures I've given you were on the hypothetical assumption that we had decided to include it in the scheme that we were building now. We haven't asked the question, what would it cost to retrofit it?
If there were to be retrofitting, would that actually fall under Highways England, or would it fall back to the council?
I think it would. I'm looking at Mr. Clayton as I'm speaking. It would all depend, wouldn't it, on where exactly the trunking and the detrunking limit would be. But since they were slips joining the trunk road, I would have thought it would be Highways England. But Mr. Clayton seems to be nodding.
So, in terms of a scheme belonging to you, let's put it that way, if I'm not going to send it to Cornwall. So in terms of a scheme belonging to you, there would presumably need to be at a stage in the future, if we were to go ahead with the proposal as is now and say we're west-facing slip only, no east-facing slip, there would need to be effectively proof in the future that east-facing slips were required. Would that be remain to be the case?
Yes, we, Julian Boswell for Highways England, there would have something unexpected from our perspective, as it were, would have had to have happened at some point in the future to justify east-facing slips being included. And in headline design terms, but we haven't done the detail, there is enough room. There's no inherent reason, I'm instructed, as to why you couldn't expand the roundabouts and put in the slip roads, but the issue, there would still be that issue about departures. And I haven't got specific instructions on whether that is a credible scenario. If you couldn't get those departures through, would that realistically kill that possibility? That's not a question we've specifically asked ourselves.
Was there anything further, Mr. Toft, in terms of that? Is there anything that anyone else would like to raise or comment on in relation to construction matters, construction cost matters is what I'm talking about here? No? Thank you. And in a similar manner, one of the other matters that was raised as part of the overall determination was environmental impacts. And I just wonder if you could run us through those points in relation to any alteration to proposals, please.
Julian Boswell for Highways England. I'm going to ask Jessica Postance, who's the EIA lead for ARUP on the scheme, to summarise the position on that.
Thanks. Jessica Postance, Environment Lead, Highways England. So based on the receipt of the agenda for this hearing, we did a kind of a high-level desk-based assessment for all the topics that we report in the environmental statement. We use the existing baseline information available to us and kind of considered kind of a line on the plan showing the east-facing slips as previously described. It is considered that the topics that would have the potential to be affected with changes in the ES would be from a landscape perspective, noise, people and communities in terms of impacts on agricultural land and businesses, which my colleague Alan Pitt will be covering later, and materials. These topics will be influenced by the addition of those east-facing slips and the associated changes with the main line and that junction. It's considered that all the other topics assessed would not be affected.
So in terms of the impacts or the effects, that would be further work that would need to be done by Highways England to take that forward. You've just at this stage done a high level, this is what would be affected.
Jessica Postance, Highways England, that is correct. We would need to do like further viewpoints and noise modelling.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions in terms of environmental impacts? Mr. Wright.
Yeah, could you detail how much cut that the road, the new road, will have going into Forborough Hill, bearing in mind that I live very close proximity to this new road, and concerns about noise levels are just a personal point of view at the moment, bearing in mind we can hear the A30 quite clearly from where we live at the moment.
That's sort of dealing with the proposal as is now. There is some information on noise in the report, and I don't have it here now because I was dealing specifically with Chibucca, but perhaps that's something that needs to be taken. I don't know if it's something you can deal with now or whether it's something that perhaps needs to be dealt with outside of the hearing process.
Julian Boswell for Highways England. I think it would be safer if we address that with Mr. Wright offline, just to assist him in understanding that.
Mr. Wright, there are some documents that show the noise assessment levels, so perhaps if straight after the hearing you could meet, you've got them here, grab them and have that conversation, and they'll be able to point you to the right information. Is that right? Thank you. Yes, Mr. Toft.
It was just a query as to whether the environmental impact of the amended speed limits has been assessed in comparison potentially with an east-facing slip. So what we're looking at is having HGVs, noise from braking and acceleration, 50, 40, 30 mile an hour gateways, pollution from going through those areas, braking and accelerating, whether that's been assessed in comparison.
Ross Cullen-Vai, Highways England. I think it's fair to say, as my colleague has said, it's been a very high-level assessment that we've done with these high-level theoretical or hypothetical options. So that would have to be considered in a more detailed assessment. But I think it'd be fair to say that we would come to the same conclusions.
Have I understood your question appropriately, Mr. Toft, in terms of, are you asking if there were east-facing slips, has there been a comparison? Is that what you're...
I think I probably combined two questions with one, Mom, which probably confused people, but there isn't... The local impact assessment, local impact report, sets out the 50, 40, 30 zones. As far as I understand it, that's not hypothetical, that is the proposal. I haven't seen that has been assessed. There's been environmental impact assessment of the effect of those impacts. So that's question one, has that been assessed? Question two, has that been assessed in comparison with east-facing slips? So in particular, Mr. Wright and Mr. Parker are saying, well, you know, you're going to have HGVs on this old A30 route. And the effect of having the A30, those HGVs being affected by those speed limits as opposed to getting onto the A30 and driving along at a constant speed.
Okay. So I think that's a fair question in terms of the proposal as is that the HGVs will use the old A30. So in terms of the impacts that we've just been discussing, have those impacts been specifically considered within the all the documents that we already have before us as part of the application process?
Can we have a moment?
Yes, of course.
Julian Boswell for Highways England. Just so the question we're answering is the question, given that there have been references to possible speed limit alterations on the existing A30, have those possible alterations been factored into the EIA assessment?
Yes.
The answer to that is no. We have assumed the existing 60 mile an hour limit will continue. The reason being that these are emerging proposals on a road that will be completely under the control of Cornwall, that could be changed in different ways at different times, and they are still only proposals, and so that is a moving target that we can't be expected to keep revisiting. Furthermore, it's in the context of a very substantial reduction in the traffic on those roads. So the straight answer to the question, have we assessed that? No, but nor do we think we should be asked to assess it.
Mr. Clayton, if I could ask you, has the council done any work in terms of environmental factors, environmental impact assessment in relation to your, what effectively become now your proposals?
Yeah, Rick Clayton for Cornwall. No, we haven't undertaken any environmental impact on these, although at this stage these are proposals, concepts that we're developing for negotiation in terms of how we would like the road to operate in the future, but those are not fixed or finalised, and we would have further work and further assessment to do before we actually took these forward after the road is detrunked to us.
Thank you. Thank you. Does that help, Mr. Toft, in terms of where we are at present?
Well, Mom, it's one of these issues of cumulative effect and downstream effects. From my perspective, it seems like a likely significant effect is that there will be changes occur to the old A30.
Is anyone able to assist me as to... I can remember seeing tables many years ago now, graphs of pollutants, for example, from traffic speeds, and there are relationships between the levels of pollutant and the level of traffic speed. We're looking at slowing things down. Are we able to get any information, Mr. Clayton?
Yeah, Rick Clayton for Cornwall. I mean, just to give an overview, obviously, we are talking about a hypothetical scenario when the road is detrunked with much lower traffic flows on it, so the journey times and the traffic is more free-flowing in that future scenario. Albeit if we implement these measures that we've outlined in our local impact report, we would not expect to see a worsening on the current position where there's much higher flows on that road. So I think if you looked in those relative terms, we'd still be looking at this being a benefit. And obviously there are wider environmental benefits from slower traffic, quieter, and the longer term as well, with more modern technology and engines and electrification of vehicles as we go forward into the medium to longer term, that you would expect to see those impacts reduce over time. I hope that helps.
Thank you. Anything further in relation to environmental impacts that anyone else wishes to raise? No? Thank you. Now, in terms of business impacts, I'm hearing it from both sides, because part of the national policy statement looks at the potential benefits. That's part of the whole process in determining whether a project should go forward or not. And the potential benefits include the facilitation of economic development, including job creation, housing, environmental improvement, and long-term or wider benefits. So the National Farmers Union, who are not with us today, but they had raised an issue in terms of business impacts and impact on local farm businesses. So I think we're looking, it's always difficult, we're looking at a large project where there may be large overall positive business impacts, is what I'm being told. But obviously on individual businesses, there may be potentially some negative impacts, and on other individual businesses there may be some positive impacts. So I just wanted to explore around that in terms of business impacts. Highways England, I come to you, Mr. Boswell, in terms of the approach that you've taken as to whether there are positive or negative impacts overall. So perhaps if you'd like to just lead us through that.
I'm going to ask Alan Pitt to lead on this, please.
Thank you. Alan Pitt for Highways England. So, Madam Inspector, I can talk through the methodology that I undertook in preparing the
People and Communities chapter of the Environmental Statement, which is Volume 6, Document 6.2, just for your reference. I can then talk you through the impact on businesses generally. I could be more specific about the impacts expected in the Calistoc area, of which Mr. Parker may be interested if that would be helpful. I've also undertaken the assessment of the impact on agricultural land, if that may be of help. But if I start through the methodology, we've considered commercial property and businesses, as well as tourism and recreation facilities, separately, although some of the latter may operate as businesses. That is because we have to consider the sensitivity and the magnitude of those impacts in a slightly different way, but all in accordance with DMRB, the Design Manual for Roads and Bridges guidance. For direct impacts, the appropriate study area is considered to include facilities within the order limits, so those within the scheme footprint. And for indirect and amenity impacts, impacts are considered within 2 kilometres of the scheme centre line for this particular project. All of the businesses potentially affected by the scheme would experience indirect impacts. As reported in paragraph 12.8.6 of the Environmental Statement Chapter 12, just for your reference, a focus meeting was held to discuss the assessment on the 11th of May 2018 with representatives of Cornwall Council, Visit Cornwall, and also the Cornwall Sustainable Tourism Group. During that meeting, agreement was reached about the study area and the approach to assessment, including the likely effects on businesses, including tourism impacts. And the Statement of Common Ground with Cornwall Council records that meeting and the outcomes. Two figures in the environmental statement are probably most helpful. We don't necessarily have to turn to those now, but just for your reference, figure 12.2 shows the commercial properties and businesses, and figure 12.5 shows the tourism and recreation facilities. There are also some helpful tables within the environmental chapter 12, which identify those receptors and then assesses the businesses and tourism facilities separately. Those are tables 12.9, 12.16, 12.20, and 12.21. So if I now turn to the impact on businesses generally, as I mentioned, the People and Communities chapter assesses the impacts on businesses, and we've done that both during construction and then during operation, being once the scheme is in place. So the assessment concludes that during construction works, there could be short-term and minor impacts as a result of disruption and diversions, given the construction works that are ongoing. Best practice construction techniques would be used to help reduce and avoid, where practical, any likely adverse impacts. And there is the outline KEMP, which sets out some of those best practice mitigation measures during construction. Overall, it's considered there would be no more than temporary slight adverse effects on any of the businesses or tourism or recreational facilities within the 2 kilometre study area. Then once the scheme is operational, there would be either neutral or slight positive benefits, and those are average conditions in terms of the relationship with the journey time benefits and the network resilience benefits that Mr. Metcalfe has explained in terms of the impacts on traffic, both with the scheme as it's proposed now, with the west-facing slips. And it's probably just worth noting that those are average results, so I would expect those benefits could be greater in the summer months, when there's generally more traffic and risk of delays, which is typically when the tourism season peaks. The scheme as proposed would mean that accessibility and choice for visitors and servicing vehicles, and by those I give an example of delivery vehicles, HGVs, those conditions would be improved compared to the current situation with the scheme in place, and that's largely again because of the improved journey times and network resilience, as Mr. Metcalfe has explained. The key point for me is that the scheme, with the addition potentially of east-facing slips, that would have a negligible impact on businesses and tourism facilities for both visitors and delivery vehicles, because of the traffic evidence that's been presented. They go hand in hand. So I'm told by Mr. Metcalfe's evidence, which I rely upon, that the benefits to journey times would be negligible with the additional provision of east-facing slips. And that relationship means that, in terms of the benefits to businesses and tourism receptors, that impact would also be negligible. If it's helpful, I can move on to my thoughts about the impact on the Calistic area. Would that be helpful?
Yes, thank you.
So, as reported in ES Chapter 12, Table 1216, and then assessed in Table 1221, those are two references I've already given, the Calistic Farm Ice Cream and Tea Room, which I believe is of most relevance to Mr. Parker's objection, that's situated around 1.5 kilometres from the existing A30. It's considered to be of a low sensitivity to change. That's by virtue of its local scale and low or medium importance and rarity. And that is the methodology we use in accordance with the design manual for roads and bridges. It would experience an indirect effect of negligible magnitude. This is because the effect would be very minor with no significant effects identified, again, largely by virtue of its proximity to the A30. During construction, it's appreciated there would be likely slight adverse effects, as I've already mentioned, in terms of businesses generally, and those, again, would try to be mitigated as best practical through the outline KEMP, Construction Environmental Management Plan. During operation, once the scheme is open, there would be slight beneficial results to both visitors and servicing vehicles, for example, HGVs and deliveries. And again, this is because of the point I made about the improved journey times and resilience evidenced by Mr. Metcalf. The scheme as is currently proposed means that visitors or delivery vehicles could travel along the new A30 via the Chiverton Junction from the A3075 or via the existing A30. That means they would have increased choice to the current situation and would benefit from that resilience as well as improved journey times, as Mr. Metcalf has explained. Mr. Metcalf has also assessed journeys to and from that area, as was explained in the table previously shown, which would show that there would be a benefit to the existing situation. And the analysis undertaken by Mr. Metcalf shows that the provision of additional east-facing slips, if they were to be put in, would have that negligible impact, both on this business and more generally. It should also be acknowledged that a point Mr. Parker made, I believe, earlier, although I wasn't in the room, was about the types of trips made by tourists. So in my experience, generally, it's acknowledged that visitors to a tourist facility would typically plan their journeys ahead and largely take infrequent trips. They do not typically experience loss of passing trade, and visitors would not be put off by the absence of east-facing slips, largely because they may not have known that they were ever proposed, if that makes sense. In fact, there would be benefits realised with the scheme in place compared to the existing situation, so they would experience the benefit whether they knew it or not. I've also considered impacts about the loss of agricultural land, if you'd like me to move on to that now.
Perhaps what we could do is deal with this issue first, in case there are questions arising, and then we can do the agricultural land separately, if that's okay. So, Mr. Parker, Mr. Toft, I'm going to turn to you in terms of what you've just heard, and I had heard your comment this morning about passing trade. Can I ask you whether you have any statistics, whether you've done any surveys in terms of what is passing trade, genuinely they've driven past, seen a sign and come in, versus they've made a plan to come to you because they've heard of your ice creams?
No, we haven't made any surveys. We have no way of knowing.
Okay. And in terms of what you've heard from, I'm sorry, is it Mr. Pitt or Pitts?
Pitt, P-I-T-T.
Thank you. So in terms of what you've heard from Mr. Pitt, are there any questions that you have or comments that you'd like to make? No, you're happy, thank you.
And just on the other points in terms of the journey times, Mom, obviously we're going to be given updated journey times. We're going to be given the data, so we'll be able to look at that. And I also hope that data will help us assist Mr. Parker. There was a comparison with the tables at the moment, table 4.4 with the east-facing slips and table 4.3 going via Chiverton Cross. I think the point was raised again in response to the open floor hearing, same document, that it's marginally quicker with east-facing slopes, east-facing slips, eastbound AM and eastbound PM, 1024 versus 1116, 1031 versus 1117. And Mr. Parker's surprised by the fact it's 46 seconds quicker to go off an east-facing slip than to carry on the A30 all the way to Chiverton Cross and up and across that way. But that will be, I suspect, dealt with in the information that's provided.
Okay, so let me just be clear what you're asking. You're saying, is it this table we're looking at now, table 4.3?
There's a comparison between table 4.3 and 4.4. So you've
right.
got... Yeah, sorry, just scroll up a bit. So you've got the eastbound AM and PM figures, 2038, do something, 1116 and 1117, and then compare them, scroll down to 14, you've got 1024 and 1031. So it's what Highways England are suggesting is that with the east-facing slips, it would be 52 seconds quicker with the east-facing slips than carrying on along the new A30 to the Chiverton Cross Junction, up the A3075 to
right.
Glissett,
okay.
And 46 seconds quicker the other way. That's a surprise, but once we've seen the data, then we may well understand that.
Okay, so we're sort of jumping back into the journey times and the traffic data, and it may be that Mr. Metcalfe is able to assist us in terms of that.
I think it's the point about what's the impact on business. That's the way we're looking at
okay.
it. We're getting the traffic data anyway.
Okay, and you're
so that's
happy
fine.
With that.
Yep. But those figures are a surprise.
Okay.
But otherwise, you know, the points in journey times, to the extent that they are accepted, but they are what they are.
Thank you. Because obviously, as Mr. Pitt has indicated, the business impacts he's looked at are based on journey times. That's what you're relying on. So as long as we're happy on those, then... But you're saying, what I'm hearing you say, tell me if I've misunderstood, but you seem to be saying you think it should be quicker, much quicker with east-facing slips than making that longer journey. Is that, have I understood you correctly?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
But I think that will fall out of the data that is given.
Okay. So I think, Mr. Metcalfe, do you have any comments in terms of those journey times at this stage or no? Okay. Okay. So comparison. I'm guessing... I need to just explore this with Mr. Metcalfe while you're here. Apologies, I've probably not phrased my questions very well. But the journey times, if we go back up to table 4.3, if we could, just a moment. So that journey time is via the existing A30. So that's the time that we were talking about earlier. So therefore, perhaps it's not that much more surprising in terms of that's not telling us to go down to Chiverton Cross and come back up. That is literally talking about going from Calistock along, apologies if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, along the existing A30. Is that correct?
Yeah, Madam Inspector, just to clarify, so table 4.3, as we see there, is from Calistock to Carlin Cross via the Chiverton Junction. So it would be to Chiverton, and then
right.
via the existing A30 in the do minimum scenario,
okay.
and via the scheme in the do something scenario. Hence the reason why the do minimum journey times are higher than what we see in table 4.2, which is the do minimum times, which would be via the Chidebucker Junction
okay.
in the do minimum scenario.
Right. So then if we go back down, to 4.3, so that time eastbound, so the 1117 you picked up, didn't you? So if we say eastbound PM, do something, 1117. If we go down then to the next one, and that compares against 1031. So that's where you're saying actually, if you were just coming from Calistic and going onto an eastbound slip, it would seem to be quicker than going down to Chiverton and back up through.
Yes, ma'am. The difference is 46 seconds, yeah. So that's a surprise.
Okay. All right, well, hopefully that will fall out of the further information that's coming through from here. Thank you. So if I go back to Mr. Pitt, and in terms of the agricultural land impact, thank you.
Yes, Alan Pitt for Highways England. So a review of the farm holdings, their plots and areas affected by the scheme, either permanently or temporarily, has been assessed in Environmental Statement Chapter 12, which is People and Communities. To help understand the potential impact of the scheme on a farm holding, landowner discussions and consultation has facilitated the opportunity for concerns to be shared. And the assessment has not taken into account the commercial operational viability of agricultural businesses beyond where there is an impact on a tourism facility, in which case it has been assumed that Highways England would seek to discuss and agree mitigation through negotiation where a direct impact is unavoidable in accordance with their relevant compensation code and discussions with the district valuer. And that's all explained in paragraph 12.9.14 of that chapter for your reference. In terms of assessing the quality of farmland, an independent review of agricultural land classification for the order limits, which is the scheme footprint, has been undertaken. The land around the Chibucca Junction has been surveyed and is land that comprises largely best and most versatile land, which is grades 2 and grade 3A. So the addition of the east-facing slips, if they were to be provided, although those calculations haven't been assessed in any detail, it would be fair to assume that any land taken by the necessity to provide those slips would involve best and most versatile land and the loss of. That would serve to exacerbate the significant adverse impact that the scheme would have in terms of loss of agricultural land.
Thank you. And in terms of that land, I'm right in thinking, Mr. Parker, that you're not directly affected in terms of the junction.
That's correct, yes. Yeah. Mr. Parker has pointed out that the land that would be used for that purpose is in between the old A30 and the new A30, so the extent to which it would be useful for agricultural purposes is somewhat debatable in that context, so I think it's stretching it a bit.
And there are some attenuation ponds also, is that
I believe
correct?
So. I'm not sure they're in that area, Mum.
They're on the northern side, aren't they? Okay. So are there any further comments or questions in relation to the farm land impact? Anything else in relation to business impacts in general? Thank you. So can I ask if there are any other matters that we've not covered today that anyone wishes to raise, anything that is part of the Chibucca Junction considerations?
Mom, there's a small point in respect of a small element of resilience. Highways England have set out their reasoning in terms of resilience of the scheme as a whole, which Mr. Parker doesn't take issue with. However, there is a comment that the west-facing slips provide resilience in respect of being able to take traffic on and off the A30. The simple point made is that resilience would be doubled if there were east-facing slips, and to not point that point out seems to be rather avoiding the issue.
And that's in terms of if there were, for example, an incident on the new, if I call it the new A30, that's the easiest way to refer to it, that traffic could then be diverted onto the old A30, providing resilience in terms of the overall travelling. Is that?
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yeah. So, for example, if there were an accident westbound, then prior to the If there were an accident eastbound, just after Chiverton Cross, then effectively all the traffic has to use the whole length of the old A30, whereas if there were an east-facing slip, it would be possible to put traffic on, and vice versa, similar. You know, you can see the opposite way around. So it's just in respect of the claim that the west-facing slips provide resilience. That's the point.
Okay. Does Highways England have any comments in relation to that?
Julian Boswell for Highways England. I'm going to ask Mr. Cullen in a moment to address emergency scenario. In the end, the judgment we've made is inevitably a fact and degree judgment. So we're not saying, or I hope we're not saying, that there is no resilience benefit whatsoever, or that there's no resilience aspect to if those theoretically the eastern facing slips had been included. We have to make an overall judgment as to whether the benefits that are delivered are appropriate in the light of the demand and a wider set of considerations. We've done that, and we stand very comfortably by that judgment. But I am just going to ask Mr. Cullen to talk about the emergency scenario.
Yeah, thank you, ma'am. Ross Cullen for Highways England. As we say, as part of us developing these proposals, we have worked closely with the Highways England operations and maintenance team, as well as our colleagues in the council, to look at how we would deal with it with those emergency scenarios. You'll see in the submission that we have got emergency access points for a westbound emergency access point further east, closer to the Tresorson Road crossing. So in the scenario, westbound traffic could be taken off at that point and then routed onto the local road network.
Thank you. Any further questions in relation to that, Mr. Toft? Are there any other matters that I need to take into account or anyone wishes to raise? No.
Madam, just a general point, if I may, that clearly, for the avoidance of doubt, and I hope there isn't any doubt, we are simply not in a position to accommodate the request that is being made to include eastern face slips at this stage in the procedure. It involves substantial new red line land. We haven't done the design, we haven't done the assessment, etc., etc. And realistically, the point of no return would have been in the aftermath of last year's statutory consultation towards the beginning of the year. And so if there was a suggestion that we could somehow amend the scheme at this stage, just to put that beyond doubt, that A, it couldn't be done procedurally, and B, we have no intention of doing it.
Thank you. So just for the benefit of anyone who is newer to the process, I need to write a report to the Secretary of State, and that report will take account of all the matters that we've been talking about and will either say, yes, I recommend that we go with the proposal as made, or actually the proposal is incorrect and we should go with something different, adding east-facing on slips, but at this stage that's not possible, and it would be for the Secretary of State to then decide whether he did or didn't agree. So just so that we're clear on the position there. So Highways England position is no change, and then it would be for the Secretary of State ultimately to decide if I were to recommend that east-facing slips should be included.
Well, Madam, sorry, yes. I actually think you'd have to recommend refusal.
Yes, I think you're probably right.
And that's why the stakes are so high, in theory, because as you can imagine, on different Highways England schemes, there are always requests that come in from different parties for changes. And they're often requests that have been made throughout the consultation period and have been looked at multiple times. And sometimes new things are raised and changes can be accommodated, but this is well beyond the spectrum of or the point that could be accommodated. So you would have to be saying, and obviously we very much hope that you won't be saying, that this is such a fundamental flaw in the scheme that it overrides all the benefits and so on and so forth, and the extent to which we say that the scheme is fully aligned with the national policy statement, et cetera, et cetera, you know, that the scheme must be refused. That is actually the only thing that is available to the Secretary of State.
But again, the Secretary of State could then disagree with me, so that remains open. It is his decision at the end of the day, is the point I'm wishing to make, and I will make a recommendation based on all the information that I've had. All right, so if there's nothing else to come forward, I just want to check on our next steps, and those are in relation to document exchange, and I was looking at our published timetable and looking at how we can work this best for everyone, because, you know, I am very well aware that this is high stakes for people, and people may be concerned on both sides of the table, and I have no wish for anyone to feel that way. So, in terms of the documents, Mr. Toff, that you mentioned your consultant requiring, are you able to email a list of those to the case officer? And I'm not sure whether Highways England have a direct, you must have a direct email address that might be able to be used. Is that the easiest way to do it, or even if you've got a printer?
Madam, we can speak to Mr.
Yes,
Toff's.
Yes, perfect. Yeah. So what we would like to happen is for those to come forward today, if possible, so that gives you time. But I'm looking at so we have a deadline 5, but that deadline 5 is Tuesday, which is obviously less than a week. And so that's a little unfair. The following deadline is not until the 4th of July, so I'm just asking whether Highways England would be in agreement with me accepting a late deadline 5 submission so that we got it within the sort of 7 days that we've talked about. But it would still fall into deadline 5 so that you'd be able to see it, and I could accept that as a late submission and it could go online. Would that cause any problems?
Yes, Madam, that would be fine.
Thank you. So, and also, in theory, my hearing action points are to be published on Monday. I know there was a little bit of a problem the last time because I had actually done the hearing action points on the day that we finished, and they weren't published because had some difficulties. But that is, as far as I'm concerned, that is the only hearing action point that we've got, unless anyone reminds me of anything else. We have some documents to come in from yourself in terms of the tables, don't we? But are those going to come in as part of the hearing responses? Okay, that's probably
yes.
The easiest way to do that then. So we'll have that information as part of the hearing responses. Information to come directly to you, Mr. Toft, if you can talk to each other straight after the hearing. And then if I could say information to come back to you, from you, if I say by next Thursday, which is the 20th, is that all right?
Ma'am, that's fine. I mean, within 7 days of receipt, as long as we get them, they should be available immediately, so that should not be a problem.
And then that will be after deadline 5, but I'll accept it as a late deadline 5 submission so that it goes straight online. And if there are any comments back, then they can fall into deadline 6 responses. All right. Have I forgotten anything? No. Thank you. All right. So in that case, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Wright, you're going to be talking to some people. Mr. Toft, you're going to be talking to some people. I'd like to thank everybody for their time. Mr. Boswell, apologies.
We weren't sure whether you wanted to take the opportunity of hearing, just listening, as it were, to an update of where we were on statements of common ground and so on. I appreciate that's
not... That might
not
be useful, actually, yes.
If you would... So I appreciate it's wouldn't be fair if that led to a discussion, but if it would be helpful to just have a summary of where we're at. To just update you, looking as we're... The end is coming into sight.
The end is nigh.
Doubtless you will want, as we want, as many loose ends to be tied up in time. Would that assist?
Yes, that would assist, actually, if everyone else is happy. This is slightly off topic, but would just assist us through the process. Thank you.
So I'm going to ask David Grattan of ARUP to take you through that.
Good afternoon. David Grattan on behalf of Highways England. So we have 8 statements of common ground in total. So the first one on the list is with Cornwall Council. That was submitted in draft at deadline one. That has continued to be reviewed with Cornwall Council, and a productive meeting was held on Monday, the 10th of June, to review that. So we have an updated statement of common ground issued to Cornwall, and I believe we're aiming for submission of that document at deadline six. The statement of common ground with Natural England has been signed with all matters agreed, and that was submitted at deadline two. Historic England, a draft of the statement of common ground with them was issued at deadline four. There was only one matter outstanding, which related to Carland Cross. So information has been provided to Mr. Russell at Historic England. So that's an updated written scheme of investigation that's detailed in the outline Kemp. We've updated the Scheduled Monument Protection Plan. And we have updated the Environmental Master Plan, which shows alterations to the footpath to link to the replacement or to the existing Crowland and an elevated viewpoint. I've just had a response from Mr. Russell at 4 minutes past 12. He must have known I was on. And he has said, bar one minor comment, that we will submit these updated documents at deadline five, including a signed statement of common ground with all matters agreed with Historic England. So that's where we are on that matter. And with the Environment Agency, again, that was submitted at deadline two, signed with all matters agreed. Moving on to the interested parties, we have a statement of common ground signed, all matters agreed, which was submitted at deadline three with True Cycling Campaign. And then we have three further statements of common ground in draft, which are progressing. So we've got one with the National Farmers Union. A telephone conversation was held around that on Friday, so it's expected that an updated signed version of that will be submitted at deadline five. A number of the matters in the most recent draft will move to agreed, but with matters outstanding relating to east-facing slips and a temporary notice. And that will be the final position of both parties, just for your awareness on that one. At the preliminary meeting, we discussed a statement of common ground with St Alban Parish Council. We have now had feedback from both the chair and the clerk of the parish council, so we have a signed version of that by both parties, with the final positions regarding the matters outstanding on that. So that will be submitted at deadline five. And then in relation to Nuncarrow Farm, discussions have been ongoing with them. The most recent draft of that statement of common ground was issued at deadline three, so we continue to review that, and updated private legal agreement that has been issued with them. A meeting was held with the Chamberlains yesterday to discuss the draft SSCG and the draft legal agreement, and we'll provide a further update on the position with them at deadline five. I don't believe we'll have a statement of common ground, but we can provide an indication of when that may be likely. And that concludes all of those in process or those that have been signed.
Thank you, that's helpful. Thank you. Are there any other matters then? No? All right, so ladies and gentlemen, thank you. I hope it's been a helpful hearing for everybody and has helped draw together points all around this particular issue. Certainly clarified some matters for me, so thank you for your time and your attendance. It remains to wish you a safe journey home and safe further meetings where you're having them. Thank you very much. The hearing is now closed.